Come on down, we're gonna sit around. We're gonna get into your business. Get into your business. Get into your business.
Welcome to the Small Business Miracles Podcast. I'm Jeff Randolph. This Small Business Podcast is brought to you by EAG Advertising and Marketing. We're going to talk about marketing. We're also here to celebrate entrepreneurs. We have marketing news and advice that business owners can use to keep moving forward. This week, we sit down with Dan Staupe. He's president of Sandler Training Overland Park in Kansas City. But first, we've got another small business marketing tip to talk about.
Get it to your business.
We're back for another marketing tip, and this time it's not just me talking and talking and talking. I'm going to talk to Angela Ridpath, who is the VP of Client Services at EAG Advertising Marketing. Angela, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you.
One more time, back again. And we're talking about email again, and this time it's email deliverability very specifically. So I'm a business owner. I'm sending out emails. How do I really know that that email is making it into somebody's inbox and not somebody's spam or junk or, you know, any of the other billion folders it could go into that it means it's not going to be read by the person I'm trying to send it to? There's a lot that goes into email delivery.
Sure. Yeah. Email deliverability is really important, especially now with there are so many people sending emails, and then there are this email spammers, and there's cybersecurity issues, and people are really trying to make sure that when they open an email, it is a legit email from a legit sender. So focusing on a few simple but important steps can really make a big difference in making sure that your emails actually reach your customers' inboxes. The first thing that I would recommend for any emailer is to make sure that you clean your email list.
Ah, yes. That's an important tip, isn't it?
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Yes. So cleaning your email list, or we call it data hygiene, it's really making sure to regularly remove email addresses that are no longer active or valid from your contact list. And it really helps show email providers that you're only sending to people who actually want to receive your messages.
Got it. And is there any other thing I should be doing to make sure I'm hitting the inbox?
Yes. Authenticating your emails. So there's a few simple technical steps that you can take to prove that your emails are coming from a legitimate source. And that also makes it look less likely that they'll be flagged as spam. And the beauty of this is that most email platforms make it really easy to authenticate now. It's so much easier. It doesn't really require somebody that understands how to get into the back end of your website and put something in a DNS record. Anyone can really authenticate these emails. And it's really important that we go through that step and to make sure that they are authenticated before you send out any emails.
Yeah, even saying the word, is that in your DNS record? That can strike fear into the hearts of business owners and marketing people, seasoned marketing people who don't have a strong IT background.
People know.
You shouldn't mess with that if you don't know what you're doing, but now much easier.
Yes. One other thing that I really try to emphasize with people is to send emails consistently and try to really send them about the same rate and at the same time, because big spikes in email volume can make providers suspicious. So those drip campaigns and those nurture campaigns are really, really designed to make sure that not only you're communicating in front of an audience on a regular basis, but also that you're a consistent emailer and you're not going out with a huge spam email message once or twice a year.
Got it. Those are great deliverability tips. If you want to make sure your messages are getting to the intended recipient, just a few little things that we could be tweaking and working on to make sure that your campaigns go through. Angela Ridpath, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Get it to your business.
Welcome back to the podcast. I am here with Dan Staupe. He is the president of Sandler Training, Overland Park, Kansas City. You are a business mentor and speaker. You have so many hats on besides that, too. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're happy to have you here. First, so Sandler Training, it makes me want to ask right away, who is this David Sandler character? What's this thing all about?
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of people think Sandler is kind of a new company, but it's really been around over 50 years. But part of it's because they didn't really expand into the 80s. But David Sandler was a cookie and cracker salesman in the 60s. And he had like just a horrible record of selling. So this is kind of interesting how this all worked out. I think he was like 87 no's out of 88 calls. And finally, he thought, you know what I got to lose? And he just went in. Instead of trying to sell it, he just said, hey, you know, you're probably gonna be like everybody else. You're not going to want this. And that's the guy that bought. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, well, what's that all about? You know, I didn't put any pressure on this guy and he bought. So anyway, make a long story short, the way he really expanded, you know, the business was he teamed up with some psychologists. And that's one thing about Sandler. It's very psychological based, and which I personally appreciate. Mm-hmm. And then he was basically just doing shows. You know, they were really shows.
Yeah.
But he would, you know, get hired by companies, and he'd go there for a day or two, and he'd be in a hotel or whatever. And that's how he grew the business. But he really expanded the business in the mid '80s when they started franchising.
All right. So yeah, give us an overview of what you do, because you're focused on ongoing reinforcement coaching and training. What does all that mean?
Yeah, so really what's different about Sandler is people work with us for years instead of a couple hours or 2 days. And not that we don't have people do that, but our primarily business is where people master the system as opposed to just being informed or learning stuff and then it just fades. So the franchise that I have personally, it's the Kansas City Metro in the state of Kansas. So that's where I'm supposed to be working, which I primarily do. So I work with companies based here. And then, but like I said, they have classes up to two a week, hour and 15 minutes that they have open access to. They get unlimited coaching. So it's really for that person who's already doing well and wants to do better. Not that we don't work with brand new salespeople, but the ROI is just greater with people that are already have momentum.
Yeah, I was going to ask that paint a picture of where a business owner starts with that. Mm-hmm. Do they say, man, I really need Gary to sell a whole lot more than Gary is selling, or is it looking at their entire team, or is it just, hey, I want to train all my new hires, I want them to understand the system as soon as they come in?
Yeah, the way they come to us really isn't the best way, but they come to us.
we can talk about both. We can say here's what really happens, yeah. But here's what I'd like to happen.
Yeah. So what it's rare that this happens, but this is the best way is when somebody's already doing well and they go, hey, let's throw some, you know, WD-40 on this and mm-hmm. see if we can get it to go a little easier. But most companies come to us after they've kind of had the old crap factor. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, things aren't working. And a lot of times they sometimes wait too long and, you know, and they want us to like be a magician and just magically change things that they've been struggling with for years. Mm-hmm. But normally they come to us and they're like, yeah, you know, this is what they'll say. These guys are doing great. Leave them alone. Uh-huh. These guys are doing okay. And then these guys, they really need some help. And that's completely bass-ackwards mm-hmm. how we want to work with people. So, but we obviously still meet with them and then we help them discover that's not going to be where your ROI is.
Oh, that I can't just untangle all of the bad things that I've built over the course of years and years. And,
or just bad hires.
Or so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I kind of get it. You, business owners, especially when they don't have like a sales leader, like a VP of sales or sales manager, they tend to hire people like themselves. Mm-hmm. And yet they'll say all the time, I'm not good at sales.
Right.
But then they hire people like themselves. And so, but the business owner can get away with things because of business owner posture. Mm-hmm. That the average Joe Blow selling that can leave in any time just can't pull off.
Yeah. And I know a lot of business owners keep tabs on their sales teams by looking at that final number. They're saying, hey, and I assume in your previous example, they're judging these guys don't need help because their final numbers are okay.
Yeah.
What should we be looking at besides just those closed sales if we're running a business?
You know, outcomes are important, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, sure. They're in sales.
Ultimately, that has to happen.
Yeah.
But
so we do want to look at that. And we want to, it's amazing how many times I talk to people and they don't even have sales goals for their people. Mm-hmm. It's shocking. And, but you got to have a North Star of sorts, right? So what's the North Star for each person? That usually is the goal. But what they tend not to track are the key performance indicators that lead to that. And particularly if somebody has a longer selling cycle, and I'll just define that as 6 months or more.
Sure.
You can be having really good things happening and you don't know it. Or you could have not so good things happening. You don't know it because your sales cycle is so low. And so what we recommend they track are the key performance indicators of attempts to reach a prospect, whether they actually talk to them or they respond. Mm-hmm. It's pretty simple stuff. Whether they actually meet with them, how often they meet with them, sales or quotes and then sales and average sale. And most people only do the sales and average sale. And the reason they don't do that is because they think they're micromanaging them or they're trying to control them. And that's just not true. It's about helping them. So if you know, people are more, if you can look at two dashboards for two different people and one's doing better, you can really identify how they're doing better as opposed to just looking at the outcomes.
Right. And if we do a full disclosure moment, I've gone through a training. I got to hang out with you for a couple of days.
You're a superstar.
Oh, I don't know about that. That let's not get crazy here. But one
I'm going to test you in a minute.
Oh God. It's a repeatable process. It's one of the things I was going to say that I really enjoyed about that the entire system though is that it is a repeatable process. There is something that you can, you know, there is structure to it, and then there is back planning that can be done. What is that ultimate sales goal I have, and what are the steps that need to happen along the way to get there? What should I be doing daily? What should I be doing weekly? What should I be doing monthly? And I like that.
Like a reverse, you kind of reverse engineer into it. You know, we still need to have a goal. If we don't have a goal, we got to get that. And then we can reverse engineer based on historical performance for you, not the industry average, not the company average. Because if you're just comparing averages, at best, you're going to be average.
Right.
And nobody really wants that, but they don't think about it that way.
Yeah. And you mentioned bad hire at some point that, you know, we're trying to repair all of the work of a bad hire at some point. Are there people that are just, hey, all the training in the world is not going to get you here. We just aren't going to be able to get you from.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on with the growth mindset, right? Mm-hmm. If somebody wants to grow, they can, but sometimes there's just such a deficit. You know, like for example, you hired three zebras, but you want them to do giraffe work. You know, we can train those zebras, but the neck's never going to be long enough.
That is,
you know, okay. So it's just sort of, or this is what I hear a lot. Hey, we need you to come in and help our people get more motivated. And I'm kind of like, well, why'd you hire demotivated people? You know, I mean, help me out here. So, but to your point, can I motivate someone who's not very motivated? Can we help with that? Mm-hmm. Sure, if they're open to it. But if someone's already motivated, it's just so much easier.
Yeah, assessments come into play at this point, right? And you do several assessments to try to help business owners figure out who their right players ought to be. Mm-hmm. Tell me just a little bit about the assessments that you're doing though to try to match up. It is motivation. It's personality style. It's all of those things.
Yeah. So there's certain competencies, and so we do two assessments. One is more for the training where they know how they roll. And then they're able to pick up on how the person across from them rolls, and then they can modify their behavior to connect. That's we use a DISC for that, and it's very, very helpful for that. And there's some things in there too. There's some sales behaviors that help. We typically don't use that as a pre-selection tool because you have to make a lot of assumptions. Mm-hmm. And so the other assessment that we use is called Harvard. And so one of the competencies, and you already mentioned it, is ambition and drive. So how do you pull that out of a DISC? Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, so that, because you can't say, well, only D's are ambitious.
Right.
No, most of them are just loud and noisy and lazy. So you can't just do that. So, you know, an ambition and drive can transcend personalities, but there's not a personality that's ambitious. Or another one that's hard to figure out in the pre-selection process is accepting responsibility. Because in sales, a lot of it is out of our control. But if we're not even controlling the controllables, it becomes messy in a hurry. And then depending on the type of sale, like a shorter selling cycle versus a longer, you may need more like control and close, or you might need more relationship management, or you might need more problem solving or more process orientation. But those competencies transcend depending on the type of sale.
Outstanding. I'm going to ask another question. Sure. But before I do that, about assessment specifically, I want to get into the lightning round before we do that. Okay. Are you ready for the lightning round?
Sure.
Well, let me start out by saying this, that I'm going to take you into the lightning round where I'm going to spend 5 minutes or so where I'm going to ask you questions you have no advanced knowledge of. It'll just take a few minutes, and I'm looking for short answers. Now, Dan, if you get some of these questions and you decide they aren't for you, how comfortable will you be telling me that these questions are not for you?
I'll just say pass.
That's perfect.
That's good. He did learn something.
I learned one or two things. I learned one or two.
Very nice job.
It's a wonderful thing. Let's talk about the assessments. Are you seeing issues where business owners could solve a lot of their problems if they only spent time, you know, looking at some of these assessments beforehand, if they just went that direction first?
Yeah, we would recommend in general to do that. You know, is it bulletproof? No. And I always say these assessments are guides and not gospel, because you got people taking them and people don't always, you know, they get interrupted, they are tired, they hopefully they run out drinking, but I know it's happened.
maybe shocker. That
but you know, so it's just sort of like an x-ray of sorts. Mm-hmm. And then what's nice about that is then they can poke around with questions that are in the assessment to be consistent. And then they can just say, you know, and it even says, this is what you're looking for. Is that what you're hearing? So it just helps them, because most people, you know, they might only hire for small, medium-sized company, one or two people every year or two.
Right, right.
So it's not like they're super skilled at this. And so if they can have a guide to help them just be more consistent, but also be more objective. So that's what we would recommend. But having said all that, we always say the assessment is only about 20% of the hiring decision, not 80 or 100, because there's just so many other things. Like we do have a culture piece on there, which helps, you know, because you can have the right person but the wrong culture.
Sure.
But it can be like if they have a block of business, or it could be that maybe they were a business owner before, so they have a different posture. It could be that they just have tremendous industry knowledge, and you got to take all that into consideration. So this is just a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. Let's talk about the business for a second, because you've been doing this for, I don't know, a minute or so, yep. Right? How long have you been?
It would be 19 years in September.
19 years. All right. So what is something that you, what advice would you give to the first year you? The first year you were in business, as you're looking back on it, what is something that you did then that you would counsel yourself against these days?
Oh, counsel myself against. So what was interesting, so I've started two businesses. Mm-hmm. So this one, I was a lot smarter than the first one.
That hopefully that continues.
So all the time. What I was thinking about some of the smart things I did in the second time that I didn't do in the first time.
Oh, yeah,
Can I go there?
Oh, please. Okay. Yeah, let's do that.
Because that's on the top of my head. So one of the things... So the first business, I was 29, and it took me 5 years to make what I was making when I left my sales job. Mm-hmm. And that's too long. So one of the things I did the second time, now, of course, I had some experiences. I gave my wife permission that she could pull the plug. We negotiated 18 months.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And plus, I was making more money and the second time.
And now you're on the clock. Like, yeah, the timer has started.
And it's so interesting. Guess what? It was 18 months. Mm-hmm. And then I go, damn it, I should have done a year. I've been less pain and suffering. But so my point there is you gotta have like a – I mean, if it's just you can still do it with your upfront contract with yourself, that if I'm not making it, I'm pulling the plug. Yeah, so just that you're doing it before – because I run into people all the time, and they're 7 years, 10 years. And they really haven't been profitable, and they keep thinking next year they're going to be. Well, they've never put a limit on it.
Which puts boundaries and definition that you hold yourself accountable for. Mm-hmm. Or in your case, you have a partner hold you accountable
for
that.
Yeah, I mean, we had four kids, and she wasn't working at the time. And it's like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, and I agreed. If, you know, if this didn't work out, I had to go get a real job. But it did. Yeah. So that's one thing. The other thing is I see a lot with people that start their own businesses is they have like a severance or something. Mm-hmm. I didn't. But they'll have a severance, like a one-year severance. They go, yeah, I'm done with corporate America, and I'm going to start my own thing, blah, 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 blah. And they really don't start working until the severance is gone.
Oh, yeah.
And where then
it would be so much nicer if they had that as a cushion.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, crap. Well, see, they have it as a cushion, but they're not working. They're working like it's a cushion. Mm-hmm. So what I would recommend is that you just really keep that somewhere that you can't get at it very easily.
Yeah. What is the best thing about being an entrepreneur?
Well, for me, I'm very self-directed. Mm-hmm. So basically, I'm unemployable.
I have worked myself into an entrepreneur job where there is no way I can work for anyone else ever again. I
have to fire myself, which I've thought about a couple times. Okay. But no, I mean, if you're, and that's one of the things that comes out in the assessment is how self-directed you are. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when people are hiring salespeople, depending on their culture, if they're really self-directed, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
You know, I call that the entrepreneurial mindset. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not that they're not coachable, but they just don't really need to be told what to do, and they don't want to be told what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll accept it. So that's one thing I think that's important, that you just really want and need autonomy, mm-hmm. freedom, but that comes at a cost.
Right.
So you still got to do the work, because it doesn't just magically happen.
Exactly. I'll follow that up with the hardest thing about being an entrepreneur.
Gosh.
I know you've got it. I mean, you've got 19 years of track record here. You've probably forgotten all the hard things that have ever happened to you.
What could be hard would be if I'm pretty social, mm-hmm. so, and I'm pretty quick to ask for help. But what would be hard is if you weren't social and you didn't have like a tribe of sorts. It doesn't have to be somebody that works for me. It can just be like if I have a really tough accounting issue, I know where to go. If I have a marketing issue, I know where to go. If mm-hmm. I have these people that I know that I don't have to come up with that myself. But if I was not really social and connected, I'd feel like I'd have to do it all myself. And then that's when I think it gets really tricky. Because you can't be all things to all people.
Right, right. Is there a part of the business that you wish you knew more about? Like, that's my weak spot?
Well, we are, I've always been pretty good with technology, mm-hmm. but we're really moving that direction. And I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of pushing back a little bit.
It's that distance learning thing, man.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's after COVID. But even like we have more online types of things mm-hmm. and I was a computer programmer for like 4 years right after I got out of college. So I always kind of had a little bit higher, you know, threshold for that. But right now I'd say I'm just even with every other 60-year-old.
You're doing all right. You're doing
I mean,
all right.
I might have a little bit more of a knack, but it's just like, oh God, no, please. But yeah, I don't know. It just blows my mind who puts these things together, because there's so many steps to everything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, do these people actually like use this, or did they just come? I mean, it's just, there's so many steps
and feature rich, and you don't know which feature it is that just messed up and caused everything to go badly. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's not super intuitive to me.
I get it. In a recent news magazine article, you talked about developing leaders. And mm-hmm. one of the takeaways that was that getting good peer-to-peer leadership at the top of the organization, the business owner, is good. We're seeing a lot of that kind of training and development. But not that next level, that, you know, the people just under that top level. What should a business owner do to make sure that there's good quality leadership coming up next?
Yeah, so depending on the size of the company, in all fairness, the leaders of these companies never got it either. Mm-hmm. So that's why it doesn't occur to them that they should give it to these folks. You know, I'm not giving them a pass, but, you know, like, I had to do it myself. I mean, I hear that all the time. But I'm like, you know, if they were as good as you, they wouldn't be working for you.
That's fair.
If they can just do all this, why not just do it themselves?
That's a winning argument.
And that's probably a little harsh. But so it's those emerging leaders, second in commands. In our world, it's VPs of sales. It's sales managers. They just kind of fall into a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And so there are companies, we happen to be one of them, that has programs for those people. But I'm telling you, we bundle it into our program. Mm-hmm. If we didn't, I would say most people wouldn't pay for it.
Because they don't see the value in it right away. Because of that, I did it with my own skill or bootstraps, or I had to learn, I stayed up late figuring it out myself or something like that. And if they were motivated, they'd do the same. And I just need to keep beating them harder.
Yeah. And then, of course, the salespeople, they have those outcomes that everybody sees. So that, well, you got to spend money on that. But then there's this person who's leading them. And that person is, you know, everybody says, I bet you like it when there's not a VP of sales and a sales manager. I say, au contraire. No, I love it when they have, of course, if they're antagonistic towards me, I don't like it.
Well, sure.
But if they're like, ooh, this is good stuff, we make a way better team. Because they don't see them as much as they used to, but they talk to them way more than I'm going to and see them. And so they can reinforce, kind of like a parent reinforces what happens at school. Mm-hmm. It's that type of thing.
Interesting. I checked out your LinkedIn profile. Of course, you know literally everyone. But one of your top voices, the popular people that you follow, is Tony Robbins, another well-known sales leader. Mm-hmm. Are you following him for competitive purposes, or is there enough room in your world to have all of those voices?
Yeah. Yeah. He does a tremendous job on the attitude piece. Mm. Yeah. And we work on attitudes as well, but we work on behaviors and techniques. And so, but I would say if you've hired a coach or a trainer that doesn't have a coach or a trainer, that's a red flag.
Oh, it, where does the therapist get therapy? Like that, mm-hmm. that kind of a thing?
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on right now because anybody can hang a shingle.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're, you can't give what you don't have. So, so part of how I get better is not only, the stuff I get through our company, but the stuff I don't get through our company.
Mm-hmm.
Because that I am able to transfer and leverage that to, I've got about 130 people that are getting training from me on a regular basis, so that I'm able to transfer and leverage that.
Just adding more value right. everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Was there a piece of advice that you got for either business or life that you're like, I'm taking this to heart. This is going to help me move forward. Something that you lean back on and go, I like they always said.
Yeah, I see where you're going. For me, it's really, there's two things. One is it's really important for me to be a product of my own product.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So for example, even though it's always kind of a little awkward, it's a compliment even if they don't mean it to be one, mm-hmm. where they'll get in the program and they'll be in a while and they'll go, you did that.
You did that to me.
I wonder what that was about, and I'm not trying to hurt them, I'm trying to help them. And they're like, and at first, people say, should I use Sandler with other Sandler people? I go, yeah, and hell yeah. I mean, you're doing it to help them.
Right. It's not a trick.
It's not a trick, but all of a sudden it's kind of like, I'm eating my own dog food, so that's really important. But then the other thing that's been super important to me, and this gets back to those key performance indicators is, the little don't sweat the small stuff, like worry about things, but the little behaviors do add up.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The ones you do and don't do. So there's a couple of books that really exemplify this. One is Darren Hardy has a book called The Compound Effect. Mm-hmm. And it's basically instead of money compounding interest, it's the habits and behaviors you have that compound interest.
Oh, okay, okay.
And then the other book that I read before that, because it came out sooner, was called Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. And so I'm really into those little behavior things. They're easy to do. They're easy not to do. But to do them, to really form those habits, because then you don't have to be as disciplined.
Mm-hmm. So you do that behavior for X number of days. It becomes a habit. Then it becomes a lifestyle.
And yeah. And I'm glad you brought up the days, because a lot of people think, 21 days because that's what they heard. And it's way longer than that. Yeah. I think minimally now they're saying like 58.
I think it was something like that I saw on a screen at Planet Fitness when they were trying to make mm-hmm. me,
keep doing it.
And sure enough, I'm there once or twice. Sure.
And it can be as many as 270 days because it depends on, everybody's got a different bent, mm-hmm. Just how God made you. And so then depending on what you're trying to form the habit on, and this is what a lot of people don't realize, is it takes a lot of more courage for certain people to do certain things. And if we don't recognize that because of their bent, and that doesn't give them a pass, but if we don't recognize that this takes a lot more courage, then, you're basically wounding them.
Oh, that's great, spectacular advice. It's good to be able to recognize that and say, hey, I know that was a challenge. That was a lot of work. Well done. Even if it's not a challenge for me as a person, right?
Yeah, it's as opposed to, this is easy. Them. Why does it take, it's like, well, there's probably some things they can do that I'm not doing.
True.
So that just to recognize that it depends on the person, and not, again, they don't get a pass, but to recognize that, it takes a lot more courage for an introvert to say certain things than it does an extrovert.
Yeah.
Just as an example.
That's a very good example. Last question in the lightning round. You're also an author. Tell us about the reunion series of books. It seems like that's not a sales thing in any way.
Yeah, it kind of is, though.
Or is it a metaphor like Tuesdays and Boring?
Yeah, I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. So, some people don't know what Reader's Digest is. I got to come up with a new one.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, so the other day I said something about it needs a little TLC, and there was a 25-year-old goes, what's that mean? So I'm like, I got to start defining these
things. Don't go chasing waterfalls. That's what it means. Don't go chasing waterfalls.
So, In 2001, there was a guy named, I just forgot his name. He wrote Halftime, Bob Buford. And he was in town, and I went to this luncheon, and I go, this is solid. Like, it's basically talking about when you get in your late 30s, mid 40s, you've had these careers, life experiences, and all of a sudden it just kind of melds into what you really were meant to do, but you didn't know it. Mm-hmm. And all those like jobs that you're only there for a year, or you were at this really tough industry and you go, what the heck is this all about? All of a sudden it just kind of all forms into the role you're in. So I knew I was going to have another role, but I hadn't manifested itself. So then 4 years later it did. And I'm at Sandler. I mean, as soon as I go, this is my halftime. I've been waiting for this. So anyway, so then what I did was I wrote a parable. It's about four classmates that go back to their 20-year class reunion. So they're 38 when the book starts, they're 48 when the book ends. Because that's when that stuff tends to happen. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, so then you get it. Like, there are even formulas in the halftime book, which I can't do. But you learn through two characters pursued their halftime, and they took a chance, and they did what they were meant to do, and two, just tried to get more of what they already had. But even when my co-author is Jim Mathis, and when he and I were talking about this, we just had this vision there were going to be three books. It was going to be the trilogy. So it took us 10 years. But first book's The Reunion. Second book's Another Reunion. And the last book is The Last Reunion. And the last book is really the legacy book, where the choices that these people made or didn't make with their families and careers, the adult children rise up through the last book. I think it's frankly the best one.
You
don't have to read the other two, but it's, I don't know.
I need to see all the character development to get to that last book and understand it. Did that satisfy a writing need that you had, or is that just
Then the other part of that, no, I don't like to write.
Then being an author is an appropriate thing.
Yes, so it's interesting. I discovered that you can be good at something and not like it. Because I'm good at writing, I'm fast, but I don't enjoy it.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's the first thing I can really say I don't enjoy that I'm good at. But what was happening was the first year or two, if you really ask the average salesperson if they ever thought they'd be a salesperson, 85 to 90% say no and hell no. I have an MBA, I have a computer programmer, I was a maintenance person, I was a CPA, and all of a sudden they're in this role, right? So that's the other thing that I thought that would be helpful, is just to have a book to say you're not crazy.
I can't end the lightning round on anything better than that. That's outstanding story. You've survived the lightning round. I hope that gives you
something. Oh, I didn't know we did it.
That was it. There's nothing to it.
It was supposed to be short answers.
Short answers.
That was not short.
Nobody cares about short answers here.
Usually I'm pretty succinct, but you got me going on that one.
That's the whole point. The whole point. Understand you better. Tell people where they can find you. Where do they get more information? How do they turn their entire sales culture around? All of those things. Where do they go?
So I'm the only Dan Stalp on LinkedIn. So that's one easy way. Just STALP. But you can call me at 913-451-1760. Or you can email me at dstalp, just first initial D for Dan, STALP, at sandler.com.
All right. Dan Stalp, president of Sandler Training Overland Park in Kansas City. Thanks for being with us today.
You bet. I enjoyed it. Get it to your business.